My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we're always talking about the decentralized revolution. We talk about the way the world is changing right before our very eyes. We're literally living through a historical moment. I have talked about many times how history books will be written about this period that we're going through right now, this transition. And of course, we talk about this as we look at this, as we try to understand this through the lens of three different disciplines: politics, finance, and technology. You know, as I've talked about many times, I think a lot of people are missing the bigger picture because they're too zoomed in and they're not understanding how all three of these work together. And so they get an incomplete picture. Now, we talk about politics, finance, and technology, but we try to talk about them in relation to each other. We don't talk about politics for politics' sakes, but where it's making rules and regulations on technology or finance, and those are certainly areas that we want to be paying attention to. And today, we are going to be digging into technology specifically. We'll talk about some of the implications of how this will affect the markets. We're going to talk about the political ramifications of this. More importantly, though, today, I want to talk about how I have been using brand new cutting-edge technology for massive efficiency and productivity gains in my own business, and how you can do the exact same thing. It's a little bit different than what we've done in the past, and the reason why is because we're doing something completely different. If you're listening on the radio, I appreciate you listening on the radio. And it's with heavy hearts, bittersweet announcement for you radio listeners today, that today is the last day of the radio show. So if you're listening on the radio, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to find me on the radio anymore, but you'll continue to be able to find me on the podcast. You can just search The Mark Moss Show on your favorite podcast player. All right, I'm still there. I'll still be on YouTube. You can still watch me and listen to me on YouTube, both on the Market Disruptors YouTube channel and on my main Mark Moss YouTube channel. So you can watch me, listen to me there. You can still listen to me over on the podcast, The Mark Moss Show. So think of it as a radio on demand, right? You can just listen to it whenever you want. But the radio show is dying and dead. Well, it's not dying. As a matter of fact, it's not dying at all. It's been growing, but I am deciding to kill it. And the reason why, I guess, partly is technology, right? When I first got recruited by iHeartMedia to do the radio show a couple of years ago, it was when Rush Limbaugh, who was the kingpin of radio, still dominated the airwaves. And, you know, they said, hey, Rush Limbaugh's dead. And, you know, there's this void sort of in radio, and maybe you could move into this radio spot. And I was like, people still listen to radio? Like, that's still a thing, right? I haven't listened to radio in forever. And so, you know, part of it was like, why am I stepping into something that's dying? Now, I hadn't planned to go down to this rabbit hole, but let's just talk about this for a minute. So, you know, I started making YouTube videos about 5 years ago, and I didn't have like a big grand scheme or big goal of what I was doing creating YouTube videos. My immediate goal, well, I talk about it, I was actually forced into it. My business partner at the time had started doing YouTube videos and he forced me to do them with him. I didn't want to. But we had created a YouTube channel to sell our newsletter. We were writing a cryptocurrency research newsletter. And at the end of 2017, December 2017, in the cryptocurrency crackdown, the U.S. government crackdown, they moved on the banks and social media. So Facebook and Google banned all advertising for anything related to cryptocurrency. And so what were we to do? And so we created a YouTube channel just to start talking about cryptocurrency. My partner was running that. And then he forced me to get on with him. So the immediate goal was like, let's just make some videos, talk about our newsletter and see if people want to buy it. Which, by the way, I'm still talking about a newsletter. It's not a cryptocurrency newsletter anymore. It's now a more broad, just general investing newsletter. Of course, we still cover Bitcoin and crypto. But that being said, I never had intended that it would get me to where I'm at today, where I'm speaking on the biggest stages and, you know, some of the business finance conferences. Mentors of mine for like 25 years, like Robert Kiyosaki, are now my good friend. And iHeart recruited me to come do a radio show. But the thing that kind of got me about it was that, you know, in the old world, in the old economy, there were gatekeepers. And so because we didn't have technology, you needed the gatekeeper, you needed somebody to put you on, to help you out, to build you out. So for example, I would need a massive amount of money to build out a factory in order to start a business and make a product, or I would need somebody who had a factory to bring me onto their platform to let me build there. The same was true with media. So in the old days, I needed ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox to give me a show. I needed a radio station to put me on their radio station. I needed ESPN to put me on as a sportscaster, right? But in the new economy, we don't need that. In the new economy, there is no gatekeepers because technology has changed that. And so I could literally, I did literally start up a YouTube channel and just start talking directly to my core audience. And by bringing value directly to them, I could build up an audience. If I made good content, people would want to watch more of it. If I made bad content, they'd watch less of it. And it took away the gatekeeper. And it also changed the paradigm of how we even think about content, content creators, which content creators weren't even a word at the time. But to think about like today now, it's still going, but it's dying. But it just seems weird to me today that like I would need to tune into any network show. There's not to point anybody out, but let's just say like CNN or ESPN for that matter. We use ESPN. Sports are a little bit more neutral. But why would I tune into ESPN and watch their lineup of programming where it's very linear, where it's like, well, okay, well now we're covering pickleball and up next is tennis. And then after that, we're gonna go to baseball. And then after baseball, we're gonna go to IndyCar racing. And it's like this linear format. But like, I don't wanna watch my content like that. If I wanna watch IndyCars, I just wanna watch IndyCars. I don't wanna wait 3 hours for it to come on. I don't wanna watch pickleball first or vice versa. If I wanna watch pickleball, I don't want it to go to IndyCars later. And so the idea behind needing, the whole idea behind the network is archaic in my opinion, of having this pre-configured lineup when today everything's on demand. And so anyway, technology changed the way we consume content, broke down sort of the gatekeeper of the network itself. And then of course, it's also evolved past radio. I put this on my Instagram today. If you're not following me on Instagram, check me out at Mark Moss. And I put up just a story talking about today would be my last day recording radio. And I put the song over it that Video Killed the Radio Star, if you guys know that song. But Video Killed the Radio. So here I was recruited by iHeart, a network, to build a show, but I'm already generating millions of views on my own without a network. What do I need iHeart for? But anyway, I like to learn. I like to grow. Let's do it. I've never done radio. I know it's an old paradigm. It's an old model, but let's do it. Over the course of the last couple of years, it's done pretty well. I think we started in about 25 markets and it grew. I think we grew up to about 75 markets, which I think is pretty good. I don't have a lot to compare that to. If you've been in radio a long time, maybe you'll know a little bit better than me, but it showed that there was demand in the market. There was some product market fit, and it grew. Now, part of what I think held back some of the growth, I would say, is that because I talk a lot about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and investing, we went through arguably one of the deepest and longest bear markets, right? Down markets in Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And you throw in all the bad press with, you know, FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried and Celsius and Terra Luna and all of that. It really sort of gave the entire industry a black eye, or more importantly, sort of sucked the energy, the air out of that. And so that probably hurt the growth a little bit. Obviously, if I had been doing it 2 years of an uptrend market, it probably would have done much better. Here we are in a downtrend market. That probably affected a little bit. That being said, it still grew, went from 25 to 75 markets. But I'm just, the amount of effort and work that it is for the radio show, just to me at this point, after a couple of years of doing it, isn't worth the effort and squeeze anymore. And so we've decided to go ahead and just pull that back. Even though it's growing, we're going to pull it back. And my goal is to focus on more better content. Well, not more, better content, higher quality, lesser quantity. But I'm still going to be here. I'll still be on YouTube, Mark Moss. I'll still be on YouTube, Market Disruptors, and I'll still be on the podcast at the Mark Moss Show. Now, I'm going to cover more technology. We're talking about the shift in technology. I'm going to tell you about new technology I'm using that's exploding my productivity and how it fits into this paradigm of this decentralized world. You don't want to miss this. If you want to improve your productivity and your profits, more work, more leverage, less time spent working, then you want to hear what I have to say. I'll be back in a minute after a very short break. Don't go away.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free.
Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about, we always talk about the intersection of politics, finance, and technology. We're sort of focusing more on technology today. And I was talking about how I am changing my technology platform from old school radio, and we're going to be going just to podcast and YouTube. So it's more interactive and I can get directly out to you. Better quality content, less work for everybody involved. I'm pretty excited about this shift. So I'll still be with you, just not here on the radio if you're listening on the radio. But today I want to talk about AI. I want to talk about artificial intelligence. And I want to talk about it from a couple different standpoints. One, obviously, it's always technology that changes the world. I say this all the time because it changes the way that we work, the way that we communicate, the way that we interact, changes the way that we organize. All right, so it's always technology. And if we look back through thousands of years of history, I use these examples all the time, we can see how they're also, not only do they change the world, they change sort of in this pendulum that swings from centralization back to decentralization. So each technology sort of does this. And this AI technology is at the coming out right in this decentralized pendulum pivot. So we have decentralized technologies like Bitcoin, decentralized protocols, decentralized communication protocols like Nostr. And this is really helping the pendulum swing back from full centralization back to decentralization. And now we also have AI. Now AI, ChatGPT, Google's Gemini, which I've been using the last couple weeks, which is actually really good for some things, are some people might say they're not real AI, they're LLMs or large language models, something like that, whatever you want to call it. We're just going to call it AI for now. It has definitely changed the world. Now, is this centralizing or decentralizing? It's both. It's decentralizing because now, as Sam Altman, the founder of OpenAI, came out and said that he believes it will finally see the first $1 billion single person business. Because ChatGPT or large language models or Gemini, whatever you want to say, because AI is now able to make us so much more productive and so much more efficient, it will have a decentralizing force. So in order to make $1 billion in the old economy, you would have had to build a giant factory, hire lots of people, have mass production, right? So it's very centralized and everybody moves into these cities, into these factories, and you have these large mass manufacturing plants. But today, to the point he's making, is you can have a solopreneur, let's just call it that, a single person business that could do $1 billion. And so instead of having one business where, you know, thousands of people work at or tens of thousands of people work at, instead of one business, now you can have 10,000 businesses. So that's very decentralizing. Now, that is what the power of this, but at the same time, it's somewhat centralizing because who controls the language model, the LLM? The LLM, the AI has to be trained and it has to be fed information for it to absorb, to have that information to recite back out. And so whoever controls that AI, whoever feeds that and controls it, then can control lots of people. Because if we're all now depending on ChatGPT or Gemini or whichever ones happen to pop up afterwards, then that is a very centralizing force. So you can see that it's a little bit of a complex issue here. But I want to dig into a little bit more specifically today some of the ways, let's see, we're going to talk about some of the fallacies that I think a lot of people are understanding this all wrong. And part of the fallacies are keeping them from really taking advantage of what's happening here. I want to talk about some of the risks and fears that I think are misplaced. And I think we need to understand them better. And it's one of those things where you either jump on it and get ahead or you fall behind. I want to talk about ways specifically that you can use it. I want to talk about ways specifically that I'm using it. All right. And then we'll talk about understanding some of the limits that it has and how to navigate some of the challenges and things like that. All right. So that's kind of the outline of what we're going to talk about, if you will, here for a moment. And part of this, like I said, is a little bit different than what I normally do, but I've just been using it so much more lately. Nowhere near an expert, but maybe I'm a couple steps ahead of you. And so let me give you some ideas. Now, first of all, it's only been 14 months. It's only been 14 months since ChatGPT was released into the world. It's crazy how fast time flies, and it's amazing how big of an impact it's already made. But there was all types of fallacies, false beliefs that came out as soon as it came out. And I want to break a couple of these down before we dive in here so you can understand this. Some of the fallacies that we have is that AI, ChatGPT, Gemini, whatever, AI is not going to make everybody smarter. As a matter of fact, it's going to do the opposite. You hear a lot about the middle class. We used to have this strong middle class in the United States, and it all got hollowed out. And why did it get hollowed out? Well, the narrative is that all those jobs got sent over to China, which is partly true. A lot of those manufacturing jobs did get outsourced. So that's a big piece of it. A bigger piece of it is because of the technology. You see, I talked about just earlier how the previous technology revolution that we had, which was the Industrial Revolution, moved everybody into cities and factories onto assembly lines. And the assembly lines made everybody work about the same. So whether you were way smarter or way dumber, we were all in the assembly line doing the same thing. And so instead of having this the smart people over here and the dumb people over here, the motivated, hardworking people here, the lazy people over here, whatever you want to, however you want to divide that, maybe dumb is unmotivated. But rather than split them up on the assembly line, it allowed them all to do the same thing. Let's just put them all together and make them equal. Equality, it's great, right? And so that created this giant middle class. The problem is that we're no longer in the industrial age. Again, technology is what changes things. We're no longer in the industrial age. Today, we're in the information age. And so instead of us, you and I, working on the assembly line together, now we're working independently. Back to Sam Altman's talk quote about OpenAI, he thinks we'll have the first $1 billion single person company. So if one person is very smart and very motivated, they could create $1 billion worth of value, and they don't need all those other people. And that is what continues to create this gap, this wealth gap, where smarter people that leverage technologies and work harder, work more focused, start to pull ahead in the information age. It's the true meritocracy. They start to pull ahead from the people who are less motivated, less hardworking, and less educated. So, no, AI is not going to make everybody smarter. It's going to make smart people smarter, and it's going to make mediocre and dumb people dumber. They're going to continue to fall further behind. So this is going to continue to widen the gap, the income inequality gap, which I think is okay. I think everybody's looking at the wrong thing. So rather than be mad about it, we're going to talk about how you can use it so you can be part of that revolution. The other reason why it's the other fallacy and part of the reason why it's not going to make everybody smarter is because everybody doesn't have good questions to ask. You see, all the LLM can do, the AI can do, is respond back to you. I like to say very often, you've probably heard me, that the quality of your life comes down to the questions that you ask. But most people ask very bad questions. I get thousands of questions every single week across my social media platforms. I know, I see them. The questions are so broad and lacking any type of intentionality that there's no way somebody can get back a good answer. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about how technology changes the world, and the technology has changed the world. We talk about Bitcoin typically. We're talking about AI. And we're going to talk about how it's changing the world and how you can take advantage of it. You don't want to miss this. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than they're worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started the Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to the Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. If you just tune in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about how technology changes the world, and right now we're talking about AI, LLMs, large language models, ChatGPT, Gemini, etc. And I was running through some of the fallacies. So first of all, it's not going to make everyone smarter. Part of the reason why is because most people don't have good questions. Like I said, I see thousands of comments every single week across my platforms. It's kind of like my finger on the pulse. Well, maybe it's a finger on the pulse on my audience. But I see so many bad questions. And what are bad questions? Questions are very broad, right? Non-specific. So for example, Mark, what books should I read? What book should you read for what? Right? Like, think about how imprecise that question is. I read all kinds of books, but it depends on what I want to learn. So when I'm hiring people, I'm reading books on human resources. I'm reading books on recruitment, right? If I'm trying to scale my my marketing, I'm reading books on marketing. If I'm trying to buy a new piece of real estate, I might be reading real estate books. So if you ask me something more specific, if you had something more specific in your head and you can ask a more specific question, you'll get a better answer. So let me give you an example of this. OpenAI, ChatGPT is so broad, you can do like almost anything. The problem is when you're given almost every option, you don't know what to do. Analysis paralysis sets in. So when ChatGPT first launched or OpenAI first launched, there was a app that was created called Lensa. This Lensa app would allow you to take a picture of yourself and then it would return to you like 10 AI generated images of yourself set in like different themes. And it was like $10. And it blew up. Within like days, it was generating millions of dollars. It got $1 billion valuation, I believe, like instantly. But here's the thing. All it was doing was using OpenAI, or it was using a different image generation one, but it was using an open source image generation model, and it was using an API. So they were only selling you what you could have already done for free on your own. So why would somebody pay them when they could just go do it for free on their own? The reason why is because people, when given unlimited options, don't know what to do. So what Lensa did is created a very narrow use case where you can do one thing, upload a picture, get 10 back. The other thing is that you have to be creative. You see, in order to ask good questions, you have to have some base knowledge. We'll come back to that. But you also have to have some creativity. If you're saying, everyone thinks they're going to be so smart with ChatGPT, like, write me a book. Write you a book about what? What subject is the book about? Who is it meant to be aimed towards? Who's the reader? What is the goal for you to get, to move that reader through the process? What type of tone should I write to that reader in? I mean, there's so many more questions, but most people have never thought through this. And then, as I said, you have to have some domain expertise. So, for example, I talk mostly about, finance and investing. And if I said, hey, ChatGPT, build me the best portfolio. Like, and what is even best? It doesn't even know that. Best for who? Best for when? Best for what? Like, it doesn't know. But if I were to say, hey, ChatGPT, during times of high inflation and low economic growth and government debt exceeding 120% debt to GDP, what assets work best in that environment? Well, see, now I can get, that's a much more precise question. It can be a much more precise answer back. But I would have to have domain expertise to even know to prompt it that way. So you think of ChatGPT as more of like a complement to yourself, which is why I said it's going to make smart people smarter. It's not going to make dumb people smarter. Now, it can, and I'm going to tell you how to do this, all right? It can, but it's just going to take a longer path, but I'm going to tell you how to do that. But a couple of things I just want to talk about real quick before we dive into how I'm using it, how you can use it, how you can actually use it to make you smarter. And if you're already smart, you can use it to make you like superhuman smart. First of all, let's just talk about some of the risks and fears here, right? So like, because I talk about technology and I talk about through thousands of years of history, it's always technology that changes the world. I can tell you that every time there's a new technology, people are scared of it every single time. In my book, The Uncommunist Manifesto, my co-author and I, Alex Fetsky, we wrote and we talked about Karl Marx, which wrote the Communist Manifesto. And that was set back in the 1800s, sort of right around this turning of the Industrial Revolution. And he wrote a couple chapters. I wrote a couple chapters, and then we rewrote each other, so it sounded like both of us. And in one of his chapters, he talked about the Luddites, and I thought the Luddites was like a derogatory term that we just like made up, and I kind of called it on it, and I didn't know. Bad on me. But the Luddites were actually a group of people. And the Luddites were a group of people that destroyed technology. They were afraid of technology. They destroyed it. So what happened is back before we had machines, we basically just worked in the farming, agriculture industry. And we worked in like the cottage industry, textiles, things like that. And they would make tapestries and fabrics. And there was a new invention called the power loom. And the power loom would allow them, this is not a machine, but it was just like a tool that they could make, a loom tool so they could do their tapestries faster. And the Luddites saw that and they were afraid of it because it was gonna be able to do the work of like dozens of people. And they said, well, we can't have this. What are all these dozens of people gonna do if we replace it with a loom? So the Luddites went and like burned them down. They destroyed the looms, right? But that's an example of every time there's a new technology, people are afraid of it. I've been down to Central America many times. I go down there surfing quite regularly. I'm going down to Nicaragua, and a couple of times I went down to Nicaragua, every time I went down, they're still working on the same road. And they're literally like putting like brick by brick by brick in under this road. And I asked the guy after going back and they're still working on the road. I'm like, what are they doing? Like, can't they just get like a tractor down here and just like get this done in the next week? And he said, yeah, but what are all the people going to do for work? The candle makers were afraid that electricity was going to take away their ability to make candles. The buggy makers were afraid of the automobile that it would take away the work. When the Industrial Revolution came, a machine could do the work of 5,000 men. What are those 5,000 men going to do? Well, it turns out they'll do higher value tasks like science and medicine, things like that. So it's always been that way. Calculators were first introduced and people were afraid that it was going to mess up people's ability to do calculations in their head. And just like calculators, ChatGPT is designed to be a tool that augments human capabilities. It doesn't replace them. So think of it as enhancing your human potential, not replacing. Now, I'm not talking about Elon Musk putting chips in your brain. That's like a whole nother conversation, one that I'm not excited about. Let's just say that. I don't like, I'm not really liking the man and machine transhumanism type stuff. But I'm not talking about that right now. I'm talking about tools that I can use to enhance my human potential. For example, on my phone, I use the app Waze all the time. I don't know if you guys know that, W-A-Z-E. And I use it all the time because using technology like social media and things like that, it can tell me where traffic accidents are, where traffic congestion is. And so if I'm driving somewhere, it can say, hey, Mark, there's an accident here, traffic congestion here, take this other road instead. And so that piece of technology has enhanced my human potential. That makes sense? So think about it like that. All right, now let's talk about what if you're not that smart? What can you do with it? Well, you can use it to get smarter. So let's talk about that first, and I'll talk about how I'm using it. So for example, if you think about it as maximizing your efficiency to achieve your goals, then you can use it like that. So for example, you could think about what do you want to do now? Or what is it that you want to learn? Or what are things that you want to focus on? What action do you want to take? What do you want to change, right? So you can start thinking about that, and then you can ask it questions. You can think of ChatGPT as like a, or Gemini. I've been using Gemini a lot more lately, and I think it's got way better results for certain things. It can't do things ChatGPT can. But for example, you can talk to it like a coach or a mentor. Or a guide, right? And so you could say, you could ask it questions. Like you can just ask it, for example, hey, I'm thinking about losing weight. What are the things I should think about, right? Or you can say, hey, I'm thinking about losing weight. How can I prompt you? How can I ask you to help me better? Like these are things that you can do. Now, if you're tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show, I gotta take a very quick break. I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna give you some more practical tips on how you can use this to become more superhuman. Don't go away. I'll be right back.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick.
I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. If you just tune in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about technology. We talk about technology a lot. Finance, technology, politics. But we're talking about technology and how it's changing the world. And we're talking specifically about sort of these new AIs, ChatGPT, Gemini, fill in the blank. We've gone through a lot. I'm not going to recap that. But I want to give you some practical stuff on how I am using it right now to make myself more superhuman, if you will, right? To augment, to make myself more efficient. So first of all, you can think of it like a coach. So I already said that the quality of your life comes down to the questions that you ask. And most of you don't have the domain expertise to ask it the specific questions you need. So you can start earlier and you can use it to train you. You can use it to teach you. So if you don't have the domain expertise, like I said, I gave a financial example for, you know, if you don't have that, you can just ask it. I use it as a coach. I use it as a mentor. I use it as an advisor, depending on what I'm trying to do. So for example, what I've been using it for, audience research. I talk about these topics. This is my angle. This is who I am. This is where I'm from. Who is the ideal audience for this? And then it gives me an ideal audience. And then I'll go back and forth. A lot of it comes through the optimization, asking multiple questions. Then I'll say, okay, great. Now that we have this audience, what are their main desires? What do they want to achieve? What are their main fears? What are their main objections, right? So like lots of audience research. I use it to find like historical parallels. Hey, this is happening. So I kind of talked about like, hey, at a time of like high inflation, low economic growth, high debt to GDP ratios, what periods of history align with this? What happened at that time, right? Things like that. I can use it to like help me find like definitions or concepts. So like, let's say financial concepts, for example, one that gets thrown around is like, let's say like fiscal dominance. You might've heard that before. Like what exactly is fiscal dominance? What does fiscal dominance mean to the economy, to the Federal Reserve, to the central banks? What does it mean to me? What times in history have we seen fiscal dominance? In times of fiscal dominance, what should I be paying attention to? How could I, right? So there's a lot that I can do there. But you really have to think about asking more precise questions. And if you don't know the right question to ask, you can ask it what question you should ask. Some of the things that you can do, you can upload information. So like, I've uploaded a lot of my writing and a lot of my videos. And so now when I ask it to write something for me, it can write it in my voice. Now, a couple pro tips here that I've learned is that, again, back to the more specific and precise your question is, the better you're going to get back. So I say, here is the role that you're in. You are an expert researcher. You are a professional copywriter. You are a financial analyst. So first you give it the role. Then you give it the job you want it to be done. You are a professional, you're a financial analyst. Your job is to evaluate this data. Your job is to write this newsletter. Your job is to whatever. And then who the job is for. So your job is a professional copywriter. The job is to write a piece of copy. You're writing it for this person, this avatar, this group of people. And then what is the ultimate outcome? What I want is I want it to be a 500 word article. I want it to be a spreadsheet. I want it to be a new infographic or image. Then what do I want? If it's like writing and stuff like that, like, or if it's images, I say, I want you to write it in a light conversational tone with a fifth grade level or lower, for example, or I want it to be written at a college grade level, depending on what it is, right? In a very authoritative voice or a fun voice. If it's an image, I'll say, I want it to be with a hard tech-driven theme, using colors, black, white, orange, and some blue, right? And so I'm giving it, the more precise I can give it, the more that I'm gonna get back to you, you know? But the thing is that really it comes down to mastering the art of good questions. Okay, another couple things that I want to just warn you about is that understand that it can play that role to help help you. It can help you research. It can help you understand concepts and things like that, as we've already talked about, but you have to understand the limits, okay? It cannot replace professional advice. It can be a good teaching tool, but don't take their word for it, especially on critical issues. Like, for example, I might say, what happens to my body when I don't eat for 24 hours? If I introduce fat only, does that break my fast, right? And I might ask it questions like that, but I wouldn't say, like, give me a diet plan, because it's been fed on language that I probably don't agree with, right? It's been given whatever the government puts out as, like, good health advice, and, like, I don't agree with that, right? So, like, it's good for, like, researching, and that's why it's good to augment you. But if you're trying to have it tell you what to do, if you're taking it, like, as professional advice, health advice, financial advice, or whatever, it's probably going to backfire on you. I certainly wouldn't do that at all, because, like I said, it's who trained the model. And what we can see is that both ChatGPT and Gemini are very, very heavily biased. For example, we've seen several studies that show that ChatGPT has a massive left-wing bias, favoring like the Labor Party, Joe Biden's Democrat Party. And so you just have to understand that. You also would understand that, like I said, it's been trained in one type of medical advice. And so rather than, like, say, give me medical advice, what I'd do is I'd use it as my research, right? I'd use it to give me perspective, a supplementary source of income, but not, like I said, as a definitive tool, all right? Now, back to sort of some of these fears. Now, well, let's just talk about, so, like, already, just in the last couple of months, I've been using it more and more and more, and there are some fears here. So technology does make us dependent on them. Back to that example of the calculator, people were afraid that people would start to depend on the calculator and they wouldn't be able to do the calculations in their head as much. That's true. One thing that I've noticed that I'm not particularly happy about is I do a lot of outdoor stuff. I lead dirt bike tours down in Mexico. And I've been doing dirt bike tours across the open desert for now about 20 years. And I'm pretty good at navigating. My whole life, I've been pretty good at navigating. I know where I'm at, right? I have a good sense of direction. But as I just told you earlier, I'm using that Waze app all the time now. I've been using Google Maps and Waze app for so long. And I can tell that my navigation skills are nowhere near as good as they used to be. Like, if I used to drive to someone's house, I knew how to get there. And now, because I used Waze to get there, I forget how to get places. And so my over-reliance on technology has weakened my ability for self-navigation. Some of the fears that I'm afraid of is I've been using it so much more lately to help me do market research, to help me come up with new concepts, to help me rewrite titles or come up with storylines and things like that. And it's so much faster and it's so much more efficient. And in a lot of cases, it's really dang good. But I'm afraid that it will weaken my own ability to do the creative thinking. Now, it's a different type of creative thinking. Like, I have to become more creative in order to enable it, in order to prompt it. So it's a different type of creative thinking. But, you know, it could certainly lower my ability or that skill that I've developed over the last, whatever, my career, to really think through these properly. So, you know, there is some of that, but you have to understand that that's all part of it. So, like, sure, being able to, buy clothes at the store took away my, ability to make my own clothes. Okay. That's a trade-off I'm willing to make. I'll make that trade-off all day. Right. So we have to understand that, like, I don't have the ability to grow my own food because I just get my food at the store. So technology just changes things. We have to understand that. And you can choose to be mad at it and get left behind, or you can choose how to use it and you can get ahead. Same with Bitcoin. A lot of people just don't want to believe in Bitcoin and they're just getting further and further behind. People don't understand the AI. They're getting further and further behind. And the best way to get involved with both is to just jump in. Start small. Buy $5 worth of Bitcoin. Buy $5. Try it out. Jump on ChatGPT or Gemini. Try it out. Ask it a couple questions. The best way is just to get started and then play with it. Play with it with an open mind, with a curious mind. Don't be afraid. Now, we don't know the future. Could it one day turn out to be something bad? It might. We don't know. Maybe you and I could have something to do to influence it and not have it turn out that way. But you won't be able to do that unless you're already using it and you know how to use it. All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about always the intersection of technology, finance, and politics. Today, we're talking about technology and how you can either use it and get ahead or you can not use it and fall further behind. Hopefully, you're in the group that gets further ahead. I certainly am. And that's what I got. Thanks so much for listening today. Hit me up on social media. Let me know you're listening. Thanks for the support. Until next time.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.